Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So tell me how this UN Security Council vote will impact what we expect will happen or what could happen in Gaza.
Well, it's an important victory for Donald Trump because it gives an international legal sanction and support to Donald Trump's 20-point peace plan, allowing for other countries in the region and around the world to support the plan under the rubric and under the argument that this is, you know, international law and it has the legitimacy of the force of international law. So that's, I think, the biggest, you know, consequence of the Security Council vote.
What do you see as the major problems with this plan as it's currently drafted?
Well, the major problem with the plan is that it was basically drafted by the United States and Israel, and it excluded one of the major parties to the conflict, the Palestinians. If you're following the story, this is a plan that was very much designed by Donald Trump's brother, I suppose Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in close coordination with the Prime Minister of Israel's office, Benjamin Netanyahu. And it was designed to basically address Israeli security and political concerns, not those of the Palestinians. So it's being presented by Donald Trump as a great plan that'll bring peace to the Middle East. But structurally, it's very much one-sided. So I think that's the biggest problem with the plan, is that it has a credibility problem. And it's an open question whether, you know, Donald Trump and the supporters of this plan can overcome that credibility problem.
Are you surprised the Security Council went for this?
No, I'm not, because there was a lot of arm-twisting and a lot of, I think, mobilization on behalf of the Trump administration to get this vote through. I suspect there was a lot of threats, as we're seeing in the context of Canada-U.S. relations, that if you don't bend in Donald Trump's direction, you can have tariffs imposed on your country. Different countries have different reasons for, you know, signing on to the agreement. And the big interesting one for me, at least as someone who studies and teaches Middle East politics, is why so many Arab and Muslim countries signed on to the plan. And you know, we can get into a reason for why that happened, but it's very much, I think, a reflection of the asymmetry in power that exists in the context of this conflict that very much favors the American-Israeli side and doesn't favor the Palestinian side.
Well, I mean, tell me more about that. Like, is this peace deal, I made air quotes there, is that actually kind of undermining any efforts at real peace in the Middle East, if it's going ahead?
I think your instincts are right. I absolutely think it does undermine the prospects of a genuine and just peace, because it doesn't address the fundamental roots of this conflict, that we have two parties to the conflict. One of them is an occupied population that doesn't have a state, doesn't have rights, and, you know, doesn't have any promise of those things happening anytime soon. The plan does talk about a possible Palestinian state down the road, but it's very much conditioned on U.S. and Israeli approval. And so that's why I'm very skeptical that this plan is going to produce the type of peace that I think many people around the world want to see, because it doesn't deal with those fundamental basic realities of the basic national rights of the Palestinians.
You know, and when it was sort of first announced that this deal was on the table, you know, the idea was hostages would be freed, aid would start to flow, and we would start to, well, achieve something at least in Gaza. What's happened? I mean, it doesn't seem like that's gone that way at all.
It hasn't. Look, the good news is that at least there's been at least a temporary ceasefire. I mean, the news today is that 28 Palestinians were killed in an escalation of hostilities, and there's been about 300 Palestinians who've been killed and roughly 3 Israeli soldiers since the announcement of this ceasefire deal. There's been some humanitarian aid going in, so that's much better than where things were, you know, in prior to October the 10th, when, you know, you had a devastated sort of, you know, set of social conditions in Gaza that have been described by many human rights organizations as a case of genocide. So, you know, we're in a better place now, but in terms of addressing the underlying sources of the conflict, I don't think we have made huge strides in that direction. And I'm very skeptical that Donald Trump's peace plan is going to get us there for the reasons that I mentioned.
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to go back to you talk about the support for this idea, or, you know, grudging support on the behalf of Middle Eastern countries. Like, what could be the fallout from that, for those countries going along?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. See, I think the states and the leaders of these countries, most of which are authoritarian regimes and dictatorial regimes, they want to work very closely with the United States. They want to support this plan. They want to carry favor with the U.S. president. But the problem is their populations are very angry and upset over what they've seen in Gaza over the last 2 years. And so the challenge that these Middle Eastern regimes have is how do they support Donald Trump's peace plan while at the same time not engendering the wrath of their own citizens who don't like this peace plan because it doesn't take into consideration Palestinian national concerns and Palestinian rights. So that's the big trade-off. And, of course, if you read the peace plan, the next phase of the peace plan is very much about organizing an international stabilization force, as it's called, of countries from the region to go into Gaza and demilitarize it. And that means taking on Hamas, who hasn't agreed to this peace plan to begin with. So are these Middle Eastern states going to send in their own troops into Gaza to do what Israel was not able to do, and that is take down Hamas? So that remains to be seen. That's the big question mark. That's what I'm looking for.
And what's happening? What's going to happen to the people?
Great question. It doesn't look like they have a good fate because, you know, when we talk about Gaza, we have to be honest and objective. Gaza doesn't exist anymore. If you look at the images in Gaza, and I'm quoting here from Jared Kushner, who, you know, is Trump's son-in-law, when he was taken to Gaza on his last visit, he said, looking at Gaza from the Israeli border, it looks like, and I'm quoting him, a nuclear bomb has been dropped on Gaza. Donald Trump has called Gaza, I think correctly, a demolition site. The means to sustain life don't exist in Gaza, and it's an open question whether it can be rebuilt. I mean, the UN figures are that it'll take 20 years just to clear away the rubble. So where are these people going to go in the next 20 years? It's an open question. Their prospects don't look very good. And so that's why I'm very skeptical about where this entire, you know, crisis and conflict is heading.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for your perspective. It was illuminating. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for the invite.